topics that are next in my list. So, namely, the second quantization for bosons and fermions, and then I will talk about non-interacting Bose gas. So I should tell you that both topics are very important, especially the first one, because nowadays almost all the Hamiltonians in condensed matter are written in their second quantized notation. The reason for this is very simple. So if we have a system of fermions and bosons, and if we look at the coordinate wave function, like I wrote yesterday, then the difficulty of working with those types of functions is that one has to either symmetrize them or anti-symmetrize them. So whenever we solve the Schrödinger equation for the system of bosons or fermions, we must subsequently take care of symmetrization or anti-symmetrization of this wave function, and quite often we have to do this by hand. So this is very inconvenient. And a big advantage is provided by the method that relies on a slightly different representation, namely occupation number representation. So if we have some kind of a system of quantum mechanical particles, bosons or fermions, then we just enumerate the states available in our system and say how many particles are in each state. So the equivalence between these two approaches was established a long time ago when quantum mechanical methods were at the stage of their development. And I will be also quite brief because you must be very comfortable with second quantized notation. So let me start first with fermions. Fermions, second quantization. So let's enumerate the state by 1, 2 multi-dots, L, and so forth. Then we can introduce the following ket vector in Dirac notation, N1, so forth, and L, and so forth. So this notation means that we have N1 particles in state 1, N2 particles in state 2, and L particles in state L, and so forth. For fermions, N1 and N2 and all other NL can be either 0 or 1. This is for fermions. So this state can be obtained, and this is a convention, from the so-called vacuum state 0. Vacuum state in which we don't have any number of particles. That is why it is called vacuum. So this state is convenient when we do manipulations with Hamiltonians involving many operators. But we have to include this in the whole set of states because we can say that this state can be obtained from vacuum via action of certain operators. That are called creation operators. So CL dagger are creation operators. It is essential that creation operators must start in a certain order due to the sign convention for the wave functions for fermions. So whenever we look at this vector, we must assume that the states here stand in the certain order. So we have to assume some kind of the ordering for these states inside this ket vector. So because if we interchange the states, the wave function must change sign. So for fermions, if we have states in this order, first N1, then N2, and so forth, then these fermionic operators, creation operators, must stand in the same order. First C1 dagger, then C2 dagger, and so forth. So if CL dagger are creation operators, then we must have Hermitian conjugates to those operators, CL called annihilation operators. CL are annihilation operators. The meaning of creation as well as annihilation operators is very simple. They create and annihilate physical particles. So creation operators create particles in a given state, given the vacuum, and CL do quite the opposite procedure. They annihilate particles. So if we annihilate all the particles, we return to the vacuum state. It is essential that when we have more than one particle, when we have many particles, then we must have certain algebra for those operators. And it has been assumed that for fermions to respect the fact that wave functions change sign under permutation of particles, we must have those operators obeying the anti-commutation relations. So if we have two, say, states, L and M, and two pairs of operators, then we have the following thing, that CL dagger, CM dagger plus CM dagger CL dagger is equal to zero. So this can be written in the following way. CL dagger CM comma CM dagger with curly brackets. So this is called anti-commutator. Of course, if we take the Hermitian conjugate of this relation, then we will get that CL comma CM anti-commutator is also equal to zero. And if we anti-commute, say CL and CM dagger, then we must get Kronecker delta symbol. So this relation, CL, say CL dagger plus CL dagger CL equal to one, means that if we act by this combination on any state, then we must get one. So this is the expression of the fact that in any state we can have not more than one particle. So if we have the fixed number of states in our system, then those vectors form orthonormal bases. Namely, if we sum over all possible states, by taking and introducing bra vector in direct notations, then we get the identity operator. So here the sum over all states, basically over all possible occupation numbers, N1, NL, and so forth. So the set of such functions is complete, meaning that each system is completely characterized by the occupation numbers in each state. So we have the absolutely equivalent way how to describe the system of our quantum mechanical particles. Enumerate all the states available and assign occupation numbers. Yes, yes, Ruben.
So for the perhaps we switch the order, or so we.
Yes, for the brass we switch the order. Yes. This is how typically Bragg vectors are written. Well, this is because if our state complicated state factorizes basically, so if 1, 2 for example is equal to the direct product of 1 and 2, then if we take the Bragg vector, then it is better to write this way, 2, than 1. Why? Because if we use this relation, then we will just have one. So if this is, oh, sorry. No, I'm saying this is convenient when we consider the normalization condition, basically 2, 1. And 1, 2, so equal to if we write this this way, so 1. So 1, then 2. Yeah, so this is 1, then this thing give us also 1. Yeah, but I believe this is not that important if we have bosons, but for fermions this is important. Anyway, let me continue. So if we introduce these states, then we must have the rules that tell us how creation and annihilation operators act not on the vacuum states, but on these states. So the rules are as follows. The rules must be consistent with this algebra. So if we have, for example, some kind of a state and the state L is either empty or occupied, and we act with operator CL on this state, then we have either 0 if an L is 0 or 1 if an L is 1. Basically, we cannot annihilate further an empty state, and if the state is occupied, then by acting with annihilation operator, we have 0 after acting with this operator. So this is the expression of this fact. Also, if we act with creation operator on the same state, then we have the opposite rule. Namely, that CL dagger acting on this state gives us 0 if and L is equal to 1, and 1 if an L is equal to 0. This means that if the state is occupied, we cannot create one more particle in the state. And if the state is empty, we can create a particle in this state and hence have 1.
Thanks.
Yes?
By this you mean that the new state will have 0 or 1 where an L used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, depending,
that's what
yes.
You mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, exactly, yes.
What do you mean by zero?
Zero, simply zero. It's algebraic zero. It's not a vacuum state. It's algebraic zero. So yes, it's an algebraic zero. So because regardless of stands after that, so one must have necessarily zero.
So what about one?
What about one? So what about one? So this means
sorry. Can you
write
out the state?
Yeah, one must have of course the state here because it's one times zero here times there. And here, of course. It's one times, one in L state. So if N L is a zero, and here if N L is one. Yes, of course, when you act with the operator on the state, you must have the state on the right. Here zero in the elf state, and here one in the elf state. Well, if you have zero, 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 then you have zero regardless of what stands as the prefected before zero, right? Of course, yes, I'm sorry about this.
So what does zero on the right hand side stand for? Because in the left hand side we have a wave function, and in the right hand side we have only zero. So
simply zero. You can write any state. Simply zero. Is this a bit confusing? A bit confusing. Okay. Because you see if NL is zero, then you cannot have here minus one. You cannot eliminate zero and get minus one. Just think about this a little bit more. So you see, suppose. I don't even know how to explain this, but you see zero times any ket vector or any bra vector will give you zero regardless of any further manipulations with this state. Okay, so let me move it up. Okay, I see that you're still a little bit confused with this, but still think more about this a little bit.
Can one think of the vacuum state as a state with zeros everywhere?
Yes, the vacuum state is the state with zeros everywhere. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. No, it's an algebraic zero. Just the prefect is zero. Yes. Exactly. This is the manifestation of impossibility. Yes, Gabriel. Second quantization. It is probably it is called second quantization because it's actually a good question, and I'm afraid I can't give you the precise answer why historically it was called. Well, for first quantization, when you write down the Schrödinger equation that describes the motion of particles. So, second quantization. I will try to find out and tell you. Yes.
I think the second one should not be algebraic, right? Because it's zero. I think the key is to assume it. It wants it to say that it's zero. The creation operator.
Yes, creation of operator. Yeah.
I don't think I'm not sure, but I don't think it's zero. Is algebraic or is zero?
Okay. Let's try to discuss this. Afterwards, okay? Okay, the meaning of this zero. So, let me continue and introduce one more operator, the so-called particle operator. And L equal to CL dagger CL. Then this is the particle number operator. So when it acts, I will put hat on top. When it acts on this state, then one gets a very simple relation. It's an L where it either 0 or 1 times the same state. So if and L is zero here, then you get zero times the same state with zero here. You see anyway, I will try to return to this at the very end and talk to you about this. So, okay. So this particle number operator, and you can check this as an exercise. Check this as an exercise. Based the following relation. When you introduce the commutator and I with CJ dagger, then you get delta IJ CI dagger and ni comma cj equal to minus delta ij ci. So the square brackets mean commutators. These relations are useful when you write down the equations of motion involving the realistic Hamiltonians. So it is just a digression from the main course of discussion, and nevertheless, it's a good exercise to check. So we're now at the position to write down the Hamiltonian for free fermions in the second quantized notation. If we have the states labeled by 1 and so forth, L, and their energies, then we can write that H dagger is equal to epsilon L and L, or equivalently sum over all states, epsilon L C L dagger C L. This is for free fermions. For free fermions. The reason why we can write the Hamiltonian for free fermions in this notation is very simple. When we take the average with respect to the aforementioned states, we will get the total energy of our system. Over the sum is taken over occupied L. So in general, the Hamiltonians in the second quantized notations are written based on equivalence of the matrix elements taken with respect to original wave functions and the matrix elements written down in the second quantization notation. So based on the fact that for free non-interacting fermions, the total energy of the system is equal to the energy of all states occupied by fermions, we write this form for free fermions. And if we have the system of fermions in a box, then we can write the Hamiltonian H dagger with the chemical potential term subtracted, H original minus mu n, where n is the operator of the total number of particles, as follows. The sum over all momenta, H squared k squared divided by 2m, minus nu, here k, ck dagger, ck. It is more convenient to work with such Hamiltonians for one simple reason. It is written in the occupation number representation involving creation and annihilation operator. And in order to find an energy of any state, we have just to say how many states are occupied and which states are occupied, and how many states and which states are empty. This is the typical starting point for Hamiltonians in condensed matter written nowadays. Hamiltonians no longer involve coordinate wave functions, but are rather written in this form. So when during the last lecture we will be talking about the Hamiltonians for electrons on the lattice, we will return to this form once again. So any questions? Yes. Large n.
No, k. K is bar k. This k does not depend on the state of the index.
K characterizes the state because free fermions in the box are characterized by momentum k that assumes the discrete values k is equal to 2 pi over l, lx, ly, lz, as I explained yesterday. And k completely characterizes the state. So
okay, so it does not depend on the index running.
Yeah. Here the sum over all k. Of course, yeah, you must add this the spin. Yeah. Sigma means spin. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, spin and momentum.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. So here, each particle has a momentum, and you're summing over all particles. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Over all states, yeah. Over all states, yeah, characterized by certain momentum and spin.
For each particle. How many fermions do we have?
No, not for each particle, but I'm summing here over the whole set of states that characterizes the system.
So k is the momentum of what?
K characterizes the state, one of the states in our system.
All the fermions.
The state that is available to any fermion. So, and each state can be occupied either by one fermion or zero fermions. Yes, Andrew.
Okay, so the k is summing over states, but the other k is the momentum of what? There are two k's. Which k is which?
This k is this k. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't put the vector notation. Yeah.
So I'm sorry. Could you write? So we have the states written labeled by the occupation.
Yes.
Numbers.
Yes.
Now, if I want to look at momentum space, how do I label a state?
So each state is characterized by certain momentum and certain spin.
So each one state that has n1 and n blah, blah, blah is characterized by one momentum k.
Yes. Okay. Yes. By one momentum k. So this Hamiltonian implies that the number of particles is not fixed. That's why it is typically written with the term involving chemical potential. So one can have any number of particles. It is important that only that the number of particles exceeds the number of available states. This is an important issue. So yes, this is another way how to write Hamiltonians, because if yesterday I wrote the Hamiltonians and used wave functions that were written for each particle, for each particle. Here we deal with the other form of description of many body system. The number of particles is not fixed, but instead we enumerate the states and say which states are occupied and which states are empty. Okay, let me go further and talk about bosons. Bosons. Here I will try to be quite brief because notations are similar. Only the algebra of operators is different. So second quantized notation for bosons. So let me quickly remind you that if we have the Hamiltonian written in a more conventional way, with Laplacian acting on coordinates of each particle to M, then the resulting wave function psi must be symmetric with respect to permutations over the whole set of particles. So psi for bosons can be written in the following form. The normalization factor I will just explain what those n's mean. So if particle here is characterized by index L, and the coordinate of each particle is RL, and it is in the state SL, then the sum means that we symmetrize over all occupied states. So this means symmetrization. Not anti-symmetrization, because for fermions we had the additional prefactor minus 1 in power s, but symmetrization. And this is just the factor that renders the total wave function normalized. So n is the total number of particles, and here we have n factorials, small n, n1 factorial, n2 factorial, and so forth. And n1 is the number of particles in state 1, and 2 is the number of particles in state 2 and so forth. The total number of particles is given by large N. Here, for bosons, we must have that N1 and so N2 and so all other and L can be either 0 or 1 or 2 and go up to infinity. So each state can be occupied by an arbitrary number of particles. This is very different from the case of fermions, where each state can be occupied by either 0 or 1 particles for bosons. As a result, we must have different way how to create the second quantization for bosons. We can also introduce the vacuum state and creation and annihilation operators that typically written using letter B. B means bosons. Bi dagger, Bi, creation, annihilation, operators. And these operators must obey the following algebra. That involves only commutators, not anti-commutators, like we had with the algebra for fermions, but commutators only. Bi, Bj equal to 0 commutator of this, then its Hermitian conjugate, Bi dagger, Bj dagger, the commutator of them also equal to 0, and one more relation, Bi, comma, Bj dagger, must be equal to delta ij, the Kronecker symbol. This formula is very important. And you must always remember one thing, that in this commutator, the operator with dagger stands the second. Bi, bj dagger, the commutator of bi, bj dagger is equal to delta ij, not vice versa. So the operator with the dagger must stand second. This is a very important thing to remember when you do the realistic calculations, because many people think that this relation is quite the opposite. First operator with dagger, then the regular operator. So our state that has N1 particles in the state 1 and NL particles in the state L can be created as follows. B1 dagger in power N1 divided by N1 factorial, B2 dagger 2 factorial, multi-dots acting on the vacuum state. Here, the order in which the states stand for bosons is not important. In order to create the ket vector for for the system of bosonic states, you have to just list them. Yes.
I really can't see the exponents. Could you read that out loud?
Those N1 and N2.
Also do that for the big equation in the bottom above. I think not many people.
Here?
So the one above, the definition for boson state.
Here on this board.
Yeah, the indices, like the summation over and the powers and all that.
The
box. Yeah.
And one factorial and two factorial, right?
What's sum over? Summation over?
Over states.
States.
States. So that's the summation over states. All states. So n, 1, and 2 can be either 0 or arbitrary integer.
And the power is half then.
Yeah.
Hmm? So, but I'm sorry, not sum, but product. Yeah, product, sorry. Sum's product, yeah. It's product over all states. And one, and two, and so forth. Actually it's better probably not even to write this sign. And one factorial, and two factorial, and multi dots. Okay, I hope now this has been clarified. And one factorial, and two factorial, and three factorial. If the state is empty, then zero factorial gives you one. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Okay, then for the summation,
Over S, yes. Here you have indeed sum. And it's some because you must create the symmetric wave function.
Yeah, and then it's pi from L equals 1 to.
Yeah. Here you have the product. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. What is the L and then on top is.
So here, R L is the coordinate.
Yeah.
Is the coordinate of L particle.
Is that an alpha? Like
it's SL, sorry. SL.
And
we're just having a little trouble seeing okay. I will try to write in bigger letters because I'm trying to put quite many material on each board. And I'm sorry that this creates some difficulty. So, okay, any other questions that should help you to get the impression of what is written on the board? Okay, very good. So let me move this a little bit up. Yeah, I will try to use bigger letters in everything. So finally, what I would like to write down concerning the operators and wave functions for bosons are the rules that describe how bosonic operators act on the state. So if we have the creation operator BL acting on one of the states, NL, then it gives us square root of NL times this state. If we have the annihilation operator acting on the same state, so this is annihilation operator, this is creation operator, NL, comma, equal to square root of NL plus 1 times the same state. Here NL, minus 1. Here, no, not the same state, but the state that has the number of particles bigger by one in state compared to original state. So BL decreases the number of particles in state L, and BL dagger increases the number of particles in state L. So here we have the square root of an L. Here we have the square root of an L plus 1. On the right, we have an L minus 1 if acted by annihilation operator, and an L plus 1 if acted by creation operator. If is this big enough? I mean, you can read here. Yeah, okay. So, and finally, if we have the particle number operator NL, BL, dagger BL, and so NL dagger acts on the same state, and that involves the state L occupied by NL particles, then we have just the number of particles in the state L and L times the same state here. So the operator NL does not affect the number of particles, but when it acts on this wave function, that it simply multiplies it by the factor NL. So, and finally, I will write down, the Hamiltonian for the system of free bosons in the box. In the second quantized notation. If we have the system of free bosons with spin zero, then the Hamiltonian with the chemical potential term subtracted can be written as follows. Sum over all momenta k, h bar squared k squared divided by 2m minus mu, b k dagger b k. This can be written as also n k, the operator for the number of particles in state k. Spin is absent here. If the spin of the bosons under consideration is zero, and again, because of this relation, when we take the matrix element with respect to Hamiltonian, then we will have sum over all occupied states. So if the state L has energy epsilon L, then we will have sum over L from epsilon L and L. Here an L can be either 0 or 1 or up to infinity. This is for bosons. Any questions at this point? So during the remaining 15 minutes, I will talk about the thermodynamics for bosons. I should tell you, my friends, that the thermodynamics, even for the system of non-interacting free bosons, is very, very interesting and very, very different from that for fermions. Why? Because the nature of the ground state for the system of free bosons is very, very different from the nature of the ground state for fermions. So there is such an interesting phenomena as the phenomenon of Bose-Einstein condensation. This just means that we have the large number of particles occupying the ground state with zero energy. But before I proceed to the calculations, I should remind you that any calculations involving thermodynamics, thermodynamic potential, must start with the calculation of grand canonical partition function, or let's say grand partition function. So to consider thermodynamics, to consider thermodynamics, we calculate the grand partition function Z grand as follows. We take this Hamiltonian with chemical potential term subtracted and insert this into definition that I gave you yesterday. L and L mu minus epsilon L. So if each state is occupied by an L particles, then we, according to the definition, make the sum over all occupation numbers. So N1 ranging from 0 to infinity, then N, be better to write this way, sum of N2 going from 0 to infinity, and so forth, over all states. So if we look at this exponent, then we immediately see that this exponent factorizes. And we can write this as follows. Product over all states, then sum from 0 to infinity, e in power beta n l, mu minus epsilon l. So this is just the geometric progression. And if we use the standard formula to sum this progression, we will get product of all states, 1 divided by 1 minus e in power beta mu minus epsilon L. Is this clear why we can do this? This is a very important step, because whenever we have non-interacting degrees of freedom, then our grand partition function can be factorized and is equal to the product of partition functions related to any given degree of freedom. So this is very important when, for example, you calculate the grand partition function for non-interacting spins in external field, for example. Then chemical potential, so not chemical, but grand potential. The grand potential omega large is equal to minus kbt logarithm of grand partition function is equal to kbt times the sum over all states logarithm of 1 minus e in power beta mu minus epsilon l. And again, to determine the chemical potential, we must use the relation that the total number of particles is equal to minus d omega over d mu. And in this case, it is equal to sum over L, 1 over e in power beta epsilon L minus mu minus 1. So if we again introduce the density of states, we can write this as follows. And so if we consider the system of bosons in a large box, so let me write this way. So for bosons in a box, this goes to the integral over all energies, because for bosons in the box, all the states are characterized by momentum, and hence uniquely by the related energy, h bar squared divided by 2m. We have d epsilon times large d, and this is the density of states, times the bosonic distribution function, where f b of epsilon is equal to 1 divided by exponent beta epsilon minus nu minus 1. This is the Bose distribution, or bosonic distribution. Pay attention, please, to the fact that here you have minus sign compared to the case of fermions. This minus sign is important and completely changes the thermodynamic properties of the system of free bosons at zero, at low temperatures, and at zero temperature too. So the density of states, I derived it last time. Actually, I asked to do the corresponding exercise, is equal to m divided by 2 pi squared h bar cubed times 2m epsilon. So this density of states implies that we have the system of bosons with zero spin. So we don't have here the additional factor of 2, contrary to the case of spinful fermions. One more important comment. We summed the geometric progression, right? Right on the upper board. So this can be done only if the chemical potential is negative. Is negative or zero at all temperatures. It is important that chemical potential mu is smaller or equal to zero for all T. So our equation that connects concentration to chemical potential will be given by concentration equal to n large divided by volume is equal to. This is just the restatement. I forgot the volume here. This is just the restatement of the equation written above. So n small concentration is equal to mk Boltzmann t in power 3/2 divided by square root of 2 pi square root h bar cubed integral from 0 to infinity square root of z dz divided by this is z. E in power z minus beta mu minus 1. So if you use the above definitions and collect all the prefactors, you will get the following basic equation that determines the chemical potential as a function of concentrations like we had for fermions. Only here that there is one very important difference. The difference lies in the fact that we have here minus 1 instead of plus 1 for fermions. And here we introduced the new variable z equal to epsilon divided by kBT. It's just the result of algebraic manipulations that requires the proper collection of prefactors, especially with respect to temperature. So here we have temperature in power 3/2. If we solve, or better to say, resolve this equation numerically, determining mu as a function of n small, then, and as a function of temperature, then we will get the following thing, that for the system of bosons, chemical potential as a function of temperature has the following form. At very high temperatures, we have the Maxwell-Boltzmann statistics. And whenever we have Maxwell-Boltzmann statistics at high temperatures, chemical potential is large and negative. So we start from very, very large in absolute value, negative values of the chemical potential. And when temperature decreases, chemical potential also decreases in absolute value, approaching point where it turns to zero. So this is mu for bosons. We start with very large negative values, and upon decrease of temperature, chemical potential gets smaller in absolute value until it reaches some point T naught where it turns into zero. This is quite different from the case of fermions. So if we resolve this equation for fermions with the plus sign here, we get a totally different picture. It's a very good exercise if you never did similar calculations before. It's a good exercise to check, for example, using Mathematica. So for fermions, I will tell you down the road, chemical potential behaves in the following way. It is negative and large at high temperatures, because at high temperatures, fermions and bosons are indistinguishable. They all obey the classical statistics. Then some point where chemical potential turns to zero, and when T goes to zero, it reaches the finite value called Fermi energy. So during your tutorial, you basically considered yesterday thermodynamics that is near T equal to zero. This is the thermodynamics here that is relevant for condensed matter systems involving electrons. The relevant region. What's going on here is not that important for fermions. On the contrary, we can ask the question, what happens if we reach temperature T0 and further decrease the temperature? What happens in this case? And the answer to this question was a puzzle for some period of time. And apparently, the problem was resolved by Bose and Einstein. So for T smaller than T0, we in fact have the large number of particles, large macroscopic number of particles in the state with epsilon equal to zero. Let's look at this integral. When we switched to thermodynamic limit, this already implies the whole procedure I talked to you about yesterday, switching from the integral over sum to the integral, continuous integral over momentum. But if the energy of a particle is zero, then such particles simply do not contribute to those integrals and must be treated separately. Down the road, I will mention that chemical potential turns to zero at mu turns zero at T naught given by this equation in which you simply put mu equal to zero. T naught equal to 3.31 times h bar squared divided by m times n in power 2/3. This is the temperature of Bose-Einstein condensation. So if we are at temperatures below T0, then we can say that this equation with the chemical potential set to zero determines the number of particles that are not in the condensate, but above the condensate. Basically, we can say that for T smaller than T0, the number of particles with the energies greater than zero are given by this expression with the chemical potential set to zero. It's V times what I have there, mkBT in power 3/2 divided by square root of 2 pi squared h bar cubed, and this integral, 0 to infinity, square root of z, dz, divided by exponent in the power of z, minus 1. All other particles are in the condensate. So the number of particles in the state with epsilon equal to 0 is just equal to n minus n epsilon greater than 0. And can be given by the following formula, n times 1 minus t divided by t naught, right, in power 3/2. So when t is equal to 0, then all particles are in the condensate. This is absolutely natural because the ground state for the gas of free bosons is the state with zero energy. One has the state with zero energies, and one allows to put all available particles in this state with zero energy. This is the phenomenon of Bose-Einstein condensation. Any questions before I make final remarks? Concerning the, yes?
Is it equal to zero?
Wait, here?
Oh, no, the number of particles with zero energy?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, at zero energy, sorry, yeah. E equals to zero. It's given by n minus number of particles in the states with energies greater than zero, and we have this formula. Finally, one last thing. The energy of the whole system of particles when T is smaller than T naught. Four temperatures between 0 and T naught. The energy of the system is determined by the particles that lie above condensate. Basically, the particles that are in the condensate and have the zero of energy do not contribute to the thermodynamic potential called energy. So the energy, well, one can use the similar formula, and but I will just quote the result, is equal to 0.128 times m in power 3 halves divided by h bar cubed times kBT in power 5 over 2 times the volume. And I can just say that heat capacity, as a result of taking the first derivative of energy with respect to temperature per unit volume, is just proportional to T in power 3. This result is remarkable. It is remarkable because as you calculated the heat capacity for the gas of free fermions yesterday, the heat capacity was proportional to temperature. So for bosons, at very low temperatures, in the presence of the condensate, CV is proportional to T in power 3 halves. This result was observed experimentally for the system of liquid helium that can be with a good approximation modeled as a system of free particles. But of course, the realistic bosonic systems are all interacting. But the system of helium-4 can be regarded as weakly interacting bosonic systems. This result was observed experimentally. That's all for today. So if you have any questions, yes, please. Photons. So photons. Of course, photons are also bosons with spin zero. Yeah. The only important difference is that for photons, the chemical potential is always zero.
So is it possible to see the photons at the boson instant condensation at T0 to infinity, something like that?
Bosons have their linear dispersion, their energy behaves linearly with my momentum, not quadratically, and this is the major difference. Yeah, there we have the different thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's negative because otherwise the grand partition function is going to be divergent. If you look at this formula, then due to minus sign, and if you assume that chemical potential is positive, then you will get a physical result that certain energies can have infinite occupation. Automatically have infinite occupation numbers. This is a physical result. It can never occur if chemical potential is negative, but can occur if it is positive. Okay, thank you for your attention.